I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm one of your usual hosts, Mike Miller, and today I'm joined once again by Mr. Josh Coyne.
Hello again.
Hello. How goes it, sir?
Yeah, very well. I'm excited to see this boring, uneventful, nondescript year out with a bang.
And also joining us from his boudoir is Mr. Tom Hall. How's it going, Tom?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Have a good Christmas.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, actually. A lot of family time with the boy and the missus, which was wonderful. And this, it marks what must be the... how many days are we off Christmas now? Three? Four?
Three. Yeah.
Two? Three. So for four and a bit straight days, I've had the pleasure of hearing a voice from Stoke-on-Trent. one of your fellow Stokians. My son has been... I'm going to go on a random tangent already. Has been making me watch When the Tiger Came to Tea. And the singer is none other than your famous brethren, Robbie Williams.
Yeah, one of the only prestigious people to come from Stoke-on-Trent. I think there's him and Slash from Motorhead also.
Yeah, Slash
came from here, and that's about it.
That's mad that Slash came from there. But anyway, we're not here to talk about... famous people from Stoke-on-Trent, which for anyone who's not based in England, or the UK rather, Google it. It's I think we've sort of summed up all you need to know. Famous for making clay, and Sir Stanley Matthews is about as much as I know.
That sums it up, yeah.
Yeah. So the NBA season is back, and we're going to talk hoops, and we've got a hell of a lot of things to get through. But just before we do, shout out to Kurt Killick for being the man behind the curtain, making all the magic happen. If you're not already, please make sure you are following us on all the social media platforms at Double Clutch UK. If we have a Discord community, discord.me/doubleclutch. And of course, if you're not watching this live, come join us live on Twitch, twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. Like I say, a whole bunch of stuff to get through. So let's start with a bit of news. It starts with a sad bit of news. On Christmas Day, Casey Jones died, a former Boston Celtics, a Hall of Famer in 1989. War number 25, was born on the 25th of May and died on the 25th of December. His daughter had a poignant tweet about his obsession with that number. An eight-time champ as a player, one time as an assistant with the Celtics, one time as an assistant, curiously, with the Lakers, and two as coach of the Celtics. So obviously, we've got two Boston guys on the... I can't believe we're already going into Boston with you two on, but it seems like a time we should. Tom, what was your reaction to the news of Casey Jones's death?
Yeah, obviously, he's not one that we've all watched because he's before all of our time, but like his achievements... let's speak for themselves. So nine NBA seasons, and out of those, he won eight championships, which is just like mind blowing. Whatever time period you played in, or whoever you played with, to have that much success is unparalleled, really. So, a legend of the game.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Josh, again, you're a massive Celtics fan.
Yeah, what really struck me with Casey Jones is kind of how ever present he is in the consciousness of Celtics fans. So whether you know him as a coach from, you know, those days, or whether you kind of go even further back to his time on the court, he'll be remembered by so many. And once, you know, Tom touched on it, I've never seen him play. I never even saw him coach, but we're, I guess, students of the game, so we know a lot about him. And we definitely know that he's widely remembered as a really great man. So RIP to a Celtics giant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, sums it up. Rest in peace to a Celtics giant. Let's move on to Daryl Morey. Just before we came on the air, just before we hit the live button, Philadelphia's GM Daryl Morey has been fined by the league for violating the anti-tampering rules. He's been fined $50,000 following a tweet about James Harden on the 20th of December. It's since been deleted. It was basically on this day 1 year ago when Harden broke Calvin Murphy's franchise assist record. Morey's tried to play the whole it was an automated tweet thing. If he set that tweet up back when he still worked for the Rockets, I'd have been incredibly surprised at his forward thinking. Either of you have a take on this?
My main one is just that you know, I can see why it's happened, why he's been punished for it. But I just think it's a weird thing to do. I think he should be punished because it's so strange. It's like posting the picture of an ex-partner and, you know, putting, you know, congratulations on this, I miss you. And then everyone around you is going to be thinking, you know, especially if you've got a new partner, is going to be like, what are you doing? You should be punished. And guess what? I believe he should be punished.
Yeah, it did look automated, but then it's pretty clear from the fine coming out that Adam Silver isn't convinced and he thinks there's something dodgy going on. What's weirder to me is the fact that it's the same amount that Harden then got fined for doing something which is like way worse in everyone's eyes. For it to both be 50k, it's just like a bit mental to me. So I think it's probably the right amount for Daryl Morey. I think Harden was just undercharged for his misdemeanors.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now. To be fair, it is a Twitter memory via onthisday.me, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I'm not in agreement. I think it's a bit harsh. Like, I think, I mean, he's not obviously tampering. He's not saying, come on, James, let's get the band back together. He's literally just recognizing a moment they shared in their professional relationship. It's not like he's, I don't know. It just seems a bit harsh to me. I don't tend to agree with the ex's argument. Maybe that's because I'm the guy who always wants to be friends. I don't know.
Well, it's, I mean, I don't know. It's a really strange one. He, like you said, even if he had set that as an automatic, I think it's just call it. I don't buy the argument. Let's move on.
Okay. We will move on. Players of the week, just before we came on air again. Seems to happen in a flurry Monday night after we've already planned what we're going to do for the pod. But the NBA has announced that New Orleans Pelicans forward Brandon Ingram and Indiana Pacers forward Domantas Sabonis have been named the NBA Eastern and Western Conference Players of the Week, respectively, for week one of the season. Ingram put up 26.7 points with 7.3 rebounds, 6.7 assists, leading the Pelicans to a 2-1 record. And Sabonis put up 24.3 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, leading them to the Pacers to a 3-0 record. Pretty impressive starts to the year for both of those guys. There's been a huge number of impressive starts, to be fair. Fair awards?
I think so. And both improved after last year as well. They both started well, both of their teams as well. And they've been the main guys, like running the offense through them on both sides. So Sabonis is a bit of a sore one, as I'm sure it is for Josh after last night. It looked like we were going to pull out a win, and then, I mean, mainly because of our bad defense on the last play, but Sabonis got the winning shot against the Celtics to keep their 3-0 record up. But yeah, I think both well deserved. Brandon Ingram's playing well as well. Him and Zion tearing it up for the Pelicans, so not too bad selection for me.
Yeah, I think that Sabonis, you've seen a real clear uplift in his aggression. I feel like he's really hunting the mismatches and exposing people that way. And also, what an incredible head of hair. Let's award him for that alone. You know, he's really upped his game in that respect. Brandon Ingram, really, I mean, I just got off listening to the JJ Redick podcast with him, and he's got this really, really respectable kind of attitude towards the game, this need to be taught, the need to get better. And obviously with the health complications that he had, which started to look quite serious, it's great to see him being kind of recognised as such a supreme scorer, which he is. And I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah, they're definitely guys who have taken steps up this season. By the way, guys, who loses on a layup like that? That's just terrible.
That's rec league stuff.
It is. It's the sort of shot I'd put up. more news. The San Antonio Spurs Coyote has won Mascot of the Year. Didn't even realize this was a thing, but there are some pretty good mascots out there. Apart from, I've got to say this, probably the worst thing about the Celtics franchise is Lucky. He's terrible. I just had to get that dig in. I'll bite back before I say any more. But the Coyote, I can't even say the word now, Coyote. Fair to give, why are we having this talking session? Mascot of the year. Well deserved.
How is this an annual award? Like, what changes year to year with the mascots?
What's he done since March?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, how do they earn this and then someone else gets it next year?
I think it's what his continued performance and his commitment to contributing on a night-to-night basis. I think some guys, they kind of they go through peaks and troughs. Like Benny is such a consistent performer, and that's why he's been rewarded so many times in this league.
You look at, that's voter fatigue, yeah, isn't it, that he didn't get it this year.
Exactly. And you see Lucky, there's times when Lucky, you'll see him on the court and he'll really be asserting himself, maybe doing a couple of trampoline tricks, and you think, you know what, this guy is showing that he's got a really high ceiling. But I think I'm with you, Mike, and people like that just don't have what's his name? Coyote. Yeah. They don't have what he's got, and that's why he's being recognised. And I think that he might become a perennial winner, so watch this space.
Well, this is the thing. I can't remember him doing much other than catching a bat out of the air. And I only remember that because Ginobili did it as well, didn't he? Or did Ginobili kill a bat or something like that?
I think he did.
Random tangent.
I think he did.
Yeah, the Coyote did the same. Rocky the Mountain Lion probably deserves a shout.
Mike, I've got a question. Are you kind of, is there a sense of bitterness because they're not recognising halftime performers of the year?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I'm so disappointed with the halftime shows that there are now, even though they're really good recaps of sort of in-game mic footage, that I'm actually just watching reruns of Red Panda for 25 minutes each time the game ends.
give Red Panda the respect she deserves.
Exactly. To be fair, there's no point having a competition because there wouldn't be voter fatigue. She's so, you know, so far and away the best performer that no one else would get a look in. Let's talk and get into actual basketball now. Overreactions to week one. It's been a topsy-turvy week. We've got tied for first place in the East with 3-0 records, Orlando, Cleveland and Indiana. Atlanta have also got a 2-0 record. Out west, OKC are top with a 1-0 record following the postponement of their first game. What a shambles that was. Minnesota are 2-1. New Orleans Pelicans are 2-1. It's very early days, but let's get some overreactions in. What is shocking you so far about this season, Tom?
I'm going to go with the Cleveland one. Seems obvious because we all had them penciled in for near the bottom of the East, but they've done so well so far. Like Garland, last year coming in, there was so much buzz about Garland. Everyone wanted to kind of nab him in the draft. And then he just kind of like didn't do anything for the first few, well, for the whole season, to be honest. He was pretty flat, looked like a rookie in every sense of the word. This year he's come out and he's a lot more well-rounded in his game. And then you've got Colin Sexton, who is still maintaining his like incredible scoring. And Andre Drummond, especially last night, absolutely killing it, dribbling it, like going in for second rebounds and stuff like that. All of them are working together well for a team that is 3-0 that none of us expected to be this good early on. It is only early, but they're playing very well and looking like if they can maintain it, they could be in that play. The play-in hunt. I'm not going to say playoff hunt because that's probably too extreme, but the play-in game maybe.
So you don't see them sustaining this. It is literally just a hot start and will fade out eventually as people get their legs.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the East is very talented, especially like the top six or seven teams. So for Cleveland to break into that would be absolutely nuts. But definitely like the 7, 8, 9, 10 is perhaps realistic just off the small sample size that we've seen.
Yeah, I want to ensure that I don't overreact at such an early point of the year. So on that note, I'd like to change my pick for league MVP to Colin Sexton and my title pick to Cleveland Cavaliers. But in seriousness, the Bickerstaff has clearly found an incredible way to kind of make these guys motivated. They seem pretty rejuvenated. They have a good mix of veterans and young guys, clearly, because Kevin Love is obviously going to have a positive influence on this team. Drummond really seems a lot happier on the court. That's why I've picked up when I've been watching them, as well as obviously his fantastic shoulders. And despite the long layoff, guys like Sexton and Garland have kind of really come out running. Nance playing at a pretty high level as well. They've started excellently. They took a big scalp in Philadelphia, albeit without Joel Embiid. I think maybe it's all inspired by their fantastic court, which is seemingly based on every teenager in the 90s and 2000s backpacks.
I think it was the starters were calling it the ransom note uniform.
The Zodiac, which I believe, letter.
Yeah. So it's an ode to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, isn't it? And it's different letters from each typographical band name or whatever. The thing that got me about last night's win is obviously Embiid's out. normally Embiid feasts on Drummond, like embarrasses him. And so I kind of feel like this was a sort of statement game. But at the same time, I'm like, if you're going to make a statement against that team, you probably ought to do it about the guy who's owned your ass every time you've met the last sort of 4 years or so. So I don't know. Like, again, amazing that they're 3-0. I hope it gives the fan base lots of hope and inspiration, but it's not going to last. I'll be very surprised if when we're 10 games in, we're still looking at these guys as being in the top eight. Anyone else jumped out to you at all, Josh?
Yeah, one big surprise for me, obviously, has been the Hornets. I thought they looked really impressive last night, and I think we started to kind of get a vision of what their ceiling could be. Hayward with much higher usage, obviously, in a different role as the primary playmaker and scorer, and his apparent health looked really, really impressive. Their young core started to step up against kind of one of the most buzzed about teams in the entire league at the moment. And they showed their ceiling last night, and they showed that it is much higher than most people would have imagined. But of course, it's about sustaining it. It'll be really interesting to see.
I think this is going to be one of the weirdest seasons that we've had for a long time. Just like, I mean, that's probably a very easy observation to make in terms of what's happened off the court and the way the games are being played. But just the way that it's affecting the teams themselves, I honestly don't know what to make of it. And usually I sort of temper my, and I'm going to do it again, I temper my expectations until we're about sort of 15 games in. That's when I sort of get a feel for each club. But I'm loving the energy that the Hornets are bringing to start with. I wonder how much they're going to miss Zeller, who's obviously broken his leg, which is a weird thing to say, because who would have thought of him of being an impact player at any sort of level? So yeah, the Hornets, they're interesting. I keep watching, can't remember which one it is now. The ball. What's his name?
LaMelo.
The ball. I was like, it's not Alonso, because I couldn't remember his name. I was like, it's LiAngelo. I keep watching him because he's in my fantasy league. Now I need to check to make sure I've got the right guy in there. But his shooting woes, his offense, there's been a lot of crazy turnovers, which I get. He's a rookie point guard. Some of his passes have been phenomenal, but on the whole, he's sort of, I don't know if struggling is the right level to pitch it at, because he clearly could play at this level, but there's some adjustments he needs to make in order to actually contribute.
And it's strange how similar to the Lonzo his game is, like, and how he's coming so far. And it's all been about those highlights already, where he's been throwing the mad passes behind his back and the full court lobs and stuff like that. But then, as you say, like, his shooting and his scoring and his overall production at the moment hasn't been as good as it was in the preseason. I mean, Lonzo's summer league was incredible, and then he kind of had the same start to the season. So I think LaMelo, the only way is up for him, obviously. I think he just needs to be more consistent off the pull-up and go into to the rim, and then that'll only open up more passing lanes for him as well, so she'll be all right.
Yep. So last night was one of the strangest days in the NBA ever. The Mavericks beat the Clippers by 51 points, having been up 50 at the half. The Hornets upset the Nets. Rozier threw down an alleged dunk on Durant. Is anyone... I mean, I've seen Nets fans saying it wasn't on him. From my perspective, it doesn't matter if it was on him at all. There's definitely a poster in there. You can get about eight different angles on that, and it will look pretty sweet as a poster. Either of you fighting to say it's not a dunk on Durant?
I think it's definitely a dunk on Durant in that there was contact made and he's contesting it. It's definitely not a dunk over. I guess we've come to know kind of dunks on someone being a posterizer where their head is here and it's not a very pretty sight. He clearly is contesting from the side, but if we're classifying a dunk on someone as there's physical contact maybe, or they're very close to them, or, you know, side to side, then yeah, there's a dunk on them.
I think that's a fair assessment. The Knicks upset the Bucks by 20 points. And as we mentioned, the Cavaliers are now 3-0. And then Golden State had a game winner from an extended member of the Curry family. Damian Lee hit a three to beat the Bulls.
It's bad, isn't it?
It's bad. Oh, Josh, you picked the Warriors as the potential threat to come out against the Lakers in the West. How are you feeling about that pick?
Okay, so I'm not. This is where I feel like I really should have asked Kirk for some kind of musical bed maybe some kind of sorrowful music. In fact, Tom, if you want to turn around and take to the piano. For anybody who was on the stream last week, this allows me to address that elephant in the room. I feel like I almost need one of those Men in Black memory pens to flash through the camera.
Here we go. That's far too happy.
There we go.
Yeah, that's reminiscent, not sorrowful. Well, I kind of feel like maybe Wayne and Garth were going to float across the front of the screen doing that.
I think that represented me going back to last week. It was a flashback to when I said that the Warriors were going to be way better than they were, because they don't look good. I was way too high on them. They're 2-2. They've been up and down. But Steph Curry would have a monumental task on his hand, as you rightfully suggested last week. If they were to play any kind of decent level of basketball, he'd have to have literally the run of his career if they were to kind of make a decent playoff position. And that takes some doing, because he's played some pretty great basketball. They were crushed by the Nets and the Bucks when they came up against two legitimate outfits. So, too much of a load without Clay and Draymond on the court, and it's just not sustainable. Do I need to apologise? I don't know.
What, oh, no.
No.
Okay. No.
Right. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, you don't need to apologise. Do you think that to myself, Steph is... Steph... Is he performing in line with your expectations? Should you expect more from him? I mean, this guy is still the highest earning player in terms of the amount of money on the table for him this season out of the entire league. Is he justifying being that high enough of a salary at this moment in time?
Well, with his skill set, he's one of those guys, isn't he, that can't put his stamp on the game without... the right fit to a certain degree. He obviously can, because he still played pretty well and he still is clearly their best player. But he's not someone like LeBron who can just force their way into a scoring position. He does need some help with the spacing. He does need a little bit of help off the ball. So I feel like in this team, how really, without kind of getting a triple-double as Steph Curry, do you kind of... justify spending that much money on losing games?
Yeah, if we're talking about being overpaid, Andrew Wiggins, oh my word, how bad he looks. He looked bad on like a minimum contract at this rate. The amount of possessions where he's just getting it on the perimeter, running into the free throw line and throwing up this like horrific post up, like airball.
I would say he was better last night, but you're right, Tom. He really is one of those puzzling guys where we all kind of, well, I certainly did. I was like, come on, he's going to find a way to really kind of carve his niche in this league. And then he just kept getting paid and they kept hanging on to him. And he's found himself in what seemingly was going to be a better position in this Golden State Warriors. If they had Clay and a fit Draymond, they could possibly fit nicely, because he could find a role in this team where he does a little bit of everything. And right now, it has to be said, he's doing a lot of nothing.
See, I'm still hopeful for this team. I mean, James Wiseman's shown promise. Mm-hmm. Draymond obviously can come back. I feel like he could almost, if he's on the floor, he'll have more of an impact. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily on the box score, but on the way he directs someone like Wiggins and could just basically bark at him.
Tell him to sit on the bench.
I'm on a tiny, like a shrinking, the water levels are rising and all that. Wiggins Island is shrinking, but there's part of me that's like, my expectations aren't high. Just be Harrison Barnes. That's it.
I hope you've got a snorkel, because you're going to be deep by the end of this season.
I've got scuba tanks, everything. I'm ready to go. Okay. So anyone else disappointed you at all so far, Tom?
The Bucks, actually, and Giannis especially. He looks tired coming off last year. I was just looking him up before this, because his free throw percentages have been terrible. He's currently shooting 58%. But then as well as that, he's scoring his lowest points, blocks, steals, attempts, field goal attempts and percentages of the last four seasons. And he just doesn't really look the same guy. He looks a bit spaced out of the games. So he's not really that engaged. It looks like he's tired coming off the back of last year, which is weird because they didn't go as far as some of the other teams in the playoffs. But obviously he's not great. And the rest
and
of the team
great
as well.
In the bubble.
No, not at all. Then the rest of the team as well, obviously they've lost a bit of depth. The defense is nowhere near as good as it was last year, so they are one of them teams where you can't really judge them until they get to the playoffs, because they've done so well in regular seasons for the past few years and then just thrown it all away. So
Yeah, which doesn't bode well if they have a really inconsistent regular season. But you're right, Tom. I feel like there's clear signs of tiredness and frustration from him because he's like, just bring me to the playoffs. Because there's against the Celtics, he was forcing himself into scoring areas at risk of offensive fouls. It just didn't seem like someone who was playing in a fluid manner, which seems ridiculous because he still obviously punishes you in so many ways. But there is that kind of air of frustration with him, Mike, I feel.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, he should be pumped and ready to go. He's obviously just signed the Supermax. He should be, you know, everything's set for him, ready to go with that extension. Something's giving him the impetus to stay there. There must be some kind of motivation. I wonder whether perhaps he's still, you know, niggling from it. It was an ankle sprain, so he should be well over that now, but maybe there's something in his head. It's difficult, but yeah, I agree, they're disappointing. I've actually been disappointed, and it's only it's literally gone from game one to now, the Nets. Now, I'm disappointed. Like, they started off game one, absolutely waxed the Warriors. They had an impressive second game as well. I was surprised they lost to the Hornets, although it was a close game, but still, it's the Hornets. And now, obviously, Durant is resting till at least the end of this year, which admittedly is only, what, 3 days away, but you know what I mean. Kyrie's also out tonight against Memphis. And also, Dinwiddie's gone down with a partial tear of his ACL. So I'm disappointed because I had such high expectations for them, and we've seen what they can do when they're all clicking, but already there's little bits that are sort of fragmenting away from the stability of the team going forwards. Is that fair, or am I just completely overreacting?
I do want to say, I predicted this 2 weeks ago, and I want to stand by it as one of the only takes that I've made this year, that Brooklyn will look really good, as they have done so far, for the first few games, and everyone say, oh, Kyrie and KD, how good are these guys? We've slept on them again. But then I do think, and you start, well, I mean, it's only like sitting out and stuff, but come June, I think there'll be so many cracks and they just won't look like the same team as they do now. So that's probably why they aren't top tier contenders for me, but definitely up there in terms of their ceiling at the moment.
Yeah, I think that this is a huge blow with Dinwiddie. I think that we knew that, as Tom said, we knew that Durant and Kyrie were going to come out aggressively and people were going to, you know, be like, you know, these guys are really legit. You know, remember how good Kevin Durant is at basketball, etc., which is what we've heard all week. And obviously that's the case. They're incredible. But what I thought was really, really killing teams when they played them early, especially, you know, in those first two games, was the depth. Having Jarrett Allen, LeVert, Shamet even off the bench really, really did kill teams when they switched to the second unit. They're so deep, and I think that was a huge advantage for them. Dinwiddie, I think, is a game changer because the scoring off the bench now, without LeVert coming off the bench, I presume,
yeah.
I guess he won't be taking on that supposed Ginobili role that was being talked about. He will be starting, and then maybe you need an uplift in scoring from the likes of Landry Shamet, and then it becomes a much different conversation. So with that, and off the back of a pretty disappointing loss, and like you said, with Kevin Durant out for the year, just sounds weird, doesn't it? There's the first suggestion of a challenge, but I would also put my money on them being pretty good for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I still think I'm intrigued to see what they do against Memphis tonight, because Memphis are obviously having their own struggles, and this seems like an opportune time to give the guys a breather. But it just seems very early, 3 games in, to rest your two stars. And, you know, but this is, like you said, there's depth to this team. They've shown last year what they can do as a unit, scrapping their way to the bubble playoffs. So we shall see. Let's get into, I can't believe we buried the lead so much, the Clippers and the Mavericks. 77-27 at the half. Now, obviously, you know, Kawhi was out because he had 8 stitches following an elbow in the game against Denver. But equally, Kristaps Porzingis was out as well. And this is a Mavs team who've seemed a little shaky to start the season. So I guess my question is, you know, Where's this Clippers team's heart if they're going to go far? Because, you know, Paul George is trying to say that this is going to be his new MVP or second MVP season.
After that great first one.
After the unforgettable first MVP season. What is wrong with the Clippers?
They're just so inconsistent, and I think that certain teams are finding ways to match up with them. I think they're kind of a lot of awkward matchups for them around the league. Obviously, they were missing Kawhi last night. It was unbelievable to watch. You know, Dallas was so much bigger than them. So obviously there was, Dallas are not sneakily, but they're a humongous team. And they destroyed them, obliterated them on the first half with boards. It was 32-16 in the first half on the boards. And then it doesn't really help when your team's also making 1 from 19 three-point attempts and the other team's making kind of, I think it was 10 out of, you know, they're making 50% off 20. But I tweeted that the quality street intake must have been substantial in Los Angeles over Christmas, but I think that was underselling it. I think they smashed the roast, the trifle, the cheese boards, the beard, the wine. They're in America, so the eggnog, all of it, because they were sluggish. They didn't come out of the races, and they just got trampled, absolutely trampled. We haven't seen anything like that for a long time.
Yeah, it was the biggest lead, wasn't it, at halftime ever? Which was just nuts. And then even in the second half, they just didn't respond, didn't even try and pull it back at all. It's a really strange one to watch.
Yeah, so eventually when people start to talk about Luka's place in the overall rankings in history, you know, years down the line, and if anyone tries to throw, yeah, but in the 60s they were playing against plumbers, you can bring this one up.
Yeah, interesting fact from the game was if the Mavs didn't score in the second half, they'd have still won.
I didn't see that. That's mad.
Which is obscene. Absolutely obscene. And the Clippers have had a woeful history, so this is just another notch in that. And somehow this is the worst score they've had. I think the best meme I saw going around, I think I shared it in the Discord actually, it was Paul George sat there, you know, superimposed over Wilt Chamberlain. Instead of 100 on the paper, it's minus 50. That had been stitches for far too long last night. Shout out to Richard Fang 8, who's just subscribed. For anyone else who wants to come and join the fun and sub along, it is twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. Christmas Day games. How did you guys feel? I personally was a bit let down. I just felt they were too, they were, well, I'll get your opinions, but they weren't competitive enough.
Yeah, I want to know, how many games did you guys watch this year? Did you do a marathon and sit in front of the TV for the whole thing, or did you catch up on them the day after?
I personally did the Pelicans game, a fair chunk of that. I did the Nets Celtic in its entirety, and then I watched highlights the next day of the rest. But there was some communal watching.
Nice.
Yeah, I got through the Pelicans game with one eye on my son and the other on the TV, and fortunately I had wireless earbuds for Christmas, so it wasn't too obvious. Actually, it wasn't even on the, I did have it on the TV, but quietly. And then I was the second game, the Celtics game. Was that the third game? So I had the second game, similar thing as well. So my boy didn't go to sleep until after 9. He was mad. He normally goes to bed. Tonight he was in bed by 6:30, but again, this isn't the parenting hour. And then I made it halfway through the Celtics game, and I was just so just knackered that I was like, this is the only close game. I don't want to go to bed. And then I woke up and I was like, well, okay, didn't miss much then. So I had to catch up with highlights the next day. How about you?
Yeah, so
it was a real kind of, sorry, Tom, it was a real kind of damp squib, wasn't it? It was like Nets-Celtics was a complete kind of non-contest in the end, despite them feigning contention. It was quite an exciting first half, and then it died off. That was probably the peak of the excitement. Miami-Pelicans was a decent way to start the day, I guess, in terms of appreciating the basketball. But Warriors-Bucks was a complete trampling again, and the Lakers won in fairly easy fashion. Once you look at that, you just think, actually, I appreciate the NBA for trying to put together an exciting bill on the big day, but it didn't pay off.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it was weird because obviously it's the only day you can see family, so I thought I probably can't just sit and watch basketball by myself all day when I'm around my folks' house for the first time in who knows how long. So I managed to get the second half of the Warriors game, and then I watched the Celtics, half at my parents' and then half in bed when I got home. Pretty flat. There was nothing that special for what was billed as this huge Christmas Day fixture list. But I guess for us, there was bigger things going on, having not seen people. So the NBA was nice to have on, but it wasn't the focus of our days, which it might have been in years past.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up there. And the Hoops nerd, our very own Hugh Hopkins in the chat, he was surprised because the matchups were solid. Maybe it's a problem of being too early at the start of the season. I think that's a fair shout. Yeah. And the matchups were solid. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Warriors' injuries depleted that side of things. It just didn't. And maybe that's why I'm disappointed, is because on paper, it looked decent.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't. Yeah. Just didn't really hit it.
Hugh's kind of right in the sense that the chemistry isn't established. There's no kind of in-season narratives that have been established either. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard to engage in the same way. And I think that also applies to the players themselves.
It's almost perfectly Christmassy, isn't it? It's like you get so excited for the Christmas lunch, the Christmas dinner, and yet by the end of it, you're just like, why have I done this to myself? Why did I have that extra roast potato covered in bread sauce? I'm a fiend for bread sauce.
Is it panettone?
Shout out Nick Whitfield. You know what I mean? It's just like you've overindulged, and somehow afterwards you look back and there's a feeling of shame.
Yeah.
So we've got 3 days left of this absolute terrible year. That's the only way I can say it without beeping myself. So let's jump into some New Year's resolutions. So we'll start off with a New Year's resolution for a player or team that you've got, and then maybe we'll do one for ourselves. Josh came up with this rather unique and clever idea of something that we find ourselves doing as a basketball fan or analyst that we'll try not to do in 2021. So let's start off with, what would you wish, well, I've given New Year's resolution to for a NBA team or player. I'll come to you first, Josh.
I think I'd go for very obvious reasons for James Harden. I think that he's got some New Year's resolutions that he needs to consider. Just generally to promise to commit to his job, I suppose, is one way to do it, which is, you know, one of the greatest jobs in the world. And we love, you know, well, I personally sometimes don't, but people love watching you play basketball. Maximize your obvious talent whilst your body allows you to, whilst you've got that short window to be an NBA player, make the most of it and be professional, be in shape, turn up on time and return your boss's calls when they give you a ring. It's simple, really.
Just to twist the knife, though, I mean, he dropped 44 with 17 assists.
Yeah, which was essentially an advert for a trading partner, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but like, what? I mean, this guy's out of shape and spending his time in strip clubs.
Exactly.
I couldn't do that if I was just, well, I am out of shape. And I definitely don't go to strip clubs. My other half listens to the podcast. No, I don't go to strip clubs. Tom, what about from you?
Mine's a bit of a Homer one, so it's for Jason Tatum to stop shooting these bad three-point shots in the last possessions of games. It happened actually quite a lot in the playoffs, and then it happened against Milwaukee and he got lucky because he banked it in. And then it happened last night as well, where he's got the last possession of the game and instead of just driving and either trying to get to the rim or get a foul, he just dribbles out the clock and then sidesteps to take a 30-foot three-pointer and misses it completely. And I don't think it was the play that Brad Stevens draws up. So it just needs to kind of learn that, find his, like, the most efficient shot in those scenarios and not just go for the glory all the time.
Fair. I mean, he's still young. What is he still 21 or is he 22 now?
He's still 19, Mike.
Still 19. But it's forever 19.
But he came out and he said, afterwards, he came out and said that he should have put more pressure on the defense, which is him obviously having a bit of self-awareness. But there's a certain element of it's who he is. You know, you take the good with the bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. He's clearly going to play a lot of hero ball during his time in green. And it's funny for Celtics fans because just as they've started to see Marcus Smart make the extra pass away from kind of hero ball crazy shots, Jason Tatum starts running the clock down and throwing step backs, contested step backs, which, as you saw against Giannis, paid off. and then sometimes they just look horrible.
That's fair. For me, it's Paul George. It's very much a recency bias thing after yesterday. It's just like, stop making excuses. I know he said, oh, I'm taking ownership of this, but just words in that regard, because then he followed it up with, they were two, you know, the guys had a nice Christmas. Oh, mate, you just took the bag. You said you're going to be a Clipper for life. That's the third team you've basically said that on. If you want to be considered top three or an MVP, whatever you want to say, then you need to go ham. When it's your chance to take this team by the, like, have the reins to this team because Kawhi's out, you need to show people that you are as good as, if not better than him. And I just didn't get it. I just didn't get that from him this time around. It was, I'm just tired of him now.
I agree.
He could be so good. Frustrated with him. Okay, so let's go with something we find ourselves doing as a basketball fan or analyst that we will try not to do in 2021. Josh, it was your question. You can set the standard.
So my main one is quite common, and that's, I need to stop trying to talk myself away from LeBron. My kind of teenage anti-LeBron bias that I had early on has created a bit of a pattern in me where I would always kind of look for ways to suggest that he's going to have a downturn. But it hasn't really paid off because the guy is some kind of cyborg, as we know. And I did that all the way up until last year where I picked the Clippers to win it all. It's not going to happen. He is the Terminator. He isn't a real human being. And I won't bet against him until he hangs them up.
I have a similar one, to be honest, and that's mine, is stop jumping into GOAT debates. Just stop it, Mike. You know how this is going to end. You can't change people's minds. It doesn't matter anyway, and we should respect and appreciate greatness wherever it is at the time it's happening, rather than wait until it's, you know, talk it down whilst it's there and then turn around and go, actually, that was amazing, and I spent my whole time looking the other way on it. Tom, what about you?
Mine is, stop getting really annoyed by really bad commentary, because it just makes me so angry while I'm watching these games. Whether it's Chris Webber or...
There's so much
Chris of it. Webber was horrific for the first few games. I couldn't stand the man. The stuff he was coming out with, it was either wrong or like just so irrelevant, it didn't matter.
And the really unnatural cuts to the Wonder Woman 1984 in cinemas now.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he's trying to take on some of those kind of Jacksonisms, isn't he? Where he'll pick one or two random expressions and repeat them out of context all the time when something happens, and he keeps getting the lines wrong. Look, we do that all the time on this podcast. We'll mumble over something, we'll get something wrong, repeat it, but he does it a lot.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, just as you cut to ad when it's the most crucial part where you need to say something either funny or really powerful, and he does it all the time, and he'll be like, and it's a bit disappointing, but at least, as we found out yesterday, I'm sure, Tom, if you watched the Celtics broadcast, at least he's not Kendrick Perkins.
Well, that's true, but what made me think of this take was that I watched it this morning, the Celtics game, and for some reason on the stream, for the first like 20 minutes, you couldn't get any audio on the Celtics, so I had to start off watching the Pacers stream. And oh my word, I don't know if it was just because it was really biased towards the Pacers, but the guy that was commentating just seemed like he didn't have a clue about basketball. He was like, he had this one play where he was saying, oh, you can't drive on Miles Turner, he's such a good interior defender, immediately followed by Jaylen Brown going and scoring on him. Like, just, you couldn't write some of what he was saying. It's ridiculous.
Cloudy.
There are some really bad commentary teams. I'm particularly not a fan of the Knicks team, even though it's Mike Breen, but I cannot stand Clyde the Glide Frazier and his rhyming, you know. Just, I cannot stand it at all. There's a lot of guys out there I dislike. I actually got upset with Doris Burke because I watched, it must have been the Christmas Day ones. And so they were all paying homage to Casey Jones, naturally as you would, but it was scripted because the second game, whatever they said then, was then repeated verbatim in the next game. It's about, you know, this one time with Larry Bird, and Larry said, hey, Casey, just give me the ball. And he went, no, Larry, team game, everyone sit down. And then said to the team, give Larry the ball. And they were like, it's just, and I was just like, word for word, you've just read the same thing and then tried to, you know, this is me. I've casually written this little jibe into my script. No, it was, oh, it just wound me up beyond contention. So, yes, I agree with that statement. And also, I love Doris Burke. Please don't hunt me down and kill me, Doris.
Yeah, that is a punishable offence in NBA media and NBA Twitter. But one more NBA broadcast thing. Have you both been struggling with audio sync? It seems that I know that they're making a really good effort to make these broadcasts as good as possible, sometimes, mostly recorded remotely in terms of the play-by-play. But I'm finding that almost every game I watch, the thing will happen and then the commentator will say, oh, 5 seconds later. It's better than before, but it is a really frustrating thing and it really makes you realise how much you took synced audio for granted. Yeah,
it's not happened too much to me. The other, just to keep adding to this list of things that annoy me on the broadcast, that whether the sponsors that aren't on the court but they're superimposed over the top, when they keep overlapping the players, oh man, it riles me.
Yeah.
That makes me laugh a lot, just randomly seeing it. And it's like, for whatever reason, it's maybe it's obviously the particular shade on the court. It's always the white player who randomly has like a tattoo across his leg or his forehead, basically, of the sponsor. Anyway, let's move on. Let's have a quick look. Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense. So celebrity fans are a fun part of the NBA broadcast and many have become iconic, such as Spike Lee with the Knicks, Jack Nicholson with the Lakers, etc. If you had to assign a new celebrity fan to be associated with a particular franchise, who would you pick and why? I'll come to you first, Tom.
I really overthought this and couldn't get a satisfactory answer. I did think Gordon Ramsay for any team would be a good one, just to have him sat courtside shouting abuse at the referee would be pretty good. And then I also thought, on a complete tangent, Jamie Carragher to support the Bucks, just to hear him try and say Giannis Antetokounmpo in his very thick accent.
That's a great shout.
Lost on me. I know he was a football player for Liverpool and that's about it. I'm guessing he's Scouse because he played his whole career there.
Yeah, the luckily there's not many C's or G's, I guess, in the surname. But it would be a challenge to not only be said, but to listen to. For me, I'm going to go with, look, I know that most people at this point are exhausted by the guy, including myself, and actually would kind of like to see him cannoned off the face of the earth. But whilst the Knicks have Spike Lee, and that's fine, I think they need all the support that they can get. So their fans probably won't like this, but I'm going to go for famous ignoramus and reality TV numpty Donald Trump, because I think that his face fits the colour scheme.
That's true.
He became extremely famous from making massive losses and failing upwards. His achievements don't actually match his massive worldwide profile. And he spent the last 5 years infuriating a large number of people. And also, he's going to have a lot of spare time in the next couple of weeks. So he might as well turn up. But Donald Trump at the Knicks is my choice. And I do have a throwaway one, which is, from a personal point of view, I would like to see Baby Yoda come to every Celtics game because he's already Team Green. And he'd be able to use the Force.
Can we replace Lucky? Can we get rid of Lucky and have Yoda in there?
Yeah, but it has to be the actual Baby Yoda, not someone in a costume.
To be honest, I cannot wait for baseball cap saying, make the Knicks great again.
That's it.
It's been long overdue.
Macca.
I failed on this one. I actually couldn't come up with anything. I know that Kirk came up with Jim Carrey for the Clippers, but I'm guessing that's some just because of the how crazy last night's game was and how crazy Jim Carrey is. Although I did like his. Did you ever see him on Comedians Getting Coffee with
Seinfeld?
And he came, he went down this really sort of meta deep path, and he was talking about how, you know, what are countries anyway, other than, and I was just like, yes. And at that point I was like, oh no, I'm on the same page.
He's got a bit of Kyrie in him
here. Turn the TV off, go to bed, you've had enough.
He needs to play Bill Walton in a film.
That would be amazing. Okay, topics from Discord this week. If you're not already on our Discord community server, please go check it out, discord.me/doubleclutch. So it's new season, a lot of chat there. Crunch Time channel is popping at the minute. Lots of Harden chat, lots of Harden ripping. Fantasy League has kicked off. Several trades have happened already, including a huge Giannis for Luka and Blake. So Giannis Antetokounmpo demanded Luka and Blake Griffin back in a deal. And the biggest stomping of the week, the owner of the number one pick, the Corby Steelman, Ginger Shaq himself, got absolutely stuffed by Tom Lamming's Wade County. Like it was 10-1 something or other. It was absolutely mad. Yeah, 100%. Tom, you won your first week matchup.
I gambled on a few players like RJ Barrett and Colin Sexton and those guys to step up, and they did me proud in this first week. So they're now off the table in trade talks. Anyone listen to this? Richard, I know he's a big dealer, now not on the table anymore.
And for anyone who is in the Discord chat and also on the Twitch at the same time, Richard Fang is still peddling Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, even as we speak. Right. Let's jump into some listener questions. The first one's actually just come in through. Well, it came in a few minutes ago, but I didn't have a chance to drop it in. From Hugh Hopkins, one for the Boston fans: is Jaylen Brown the best Boston Celtic?
I think so at the moment. I mean, that's obviously quite a broad question. He isn't the most talented Boston Celtic, and he doesn't have the highest ceiling. But so far this season, in terms of steady contribution, he's been really keeping Boston in games. With his kind of steady array of scoring, he's found a way to compose himself on the ball more. He controls his own pace. He's really, really shooting consistently from mid-range, and he makes the extra pass when needed. I currently think he's the player that is contributing the most towards winning, even though that's kind of here or there. Yeah. And Jason Tatum is obviously the most talented.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown looks so bad in the preseason, like one of the worst players on the court for those games. So I've been really glad to see him come in and perform really well. He's doing a lot with the second unit, which the Celtics are struggling with quite a bit. So I'm just glad to see him play well. And it's kind of similar to what you said, Josh. I don't think he's the best player, but he's playing the best basketball at the moment. So
yeah,
I like Jaylen Brown. I said it before. I picked him last season as my preferred Celtic. So I'm in agreement with you. But equally, Tatum could go to another level.
Richard
Fang. Yeah. As they have bucketheads in Australia for T20 cricket, what do you think the NBA should have as a comparison? Now, none of us really understood what a buckethead was, so we had to Google it. My understanding, so basically, KFC sponsor the Big Bash League, or this, which, by the way, reminds me of a tweet we got wrong earlier in the year when we tagged the Big Bash League, which are at BBL, instead of the British Basketball League, which led to quite a nice interaction with G'day Mates and How's It Going, Old Chap, between the BBL and the BBL. So, you know, fun aside there. But basically, a buckethead, the BBL is sponsored by KFC. People turn up to the games wearing buckets on their head, which kind of sounds like a Knicks game. But I believe there's some kind of prize or something given if you catch a ball that's going over the boundary whilst wearing a bucket. That might be completely wrong, but that's what we've assumed is correct to answer this question. So what do you think the NBA should do in comparison to that?
So mine was ever so slightly related. We see it quite a lot now where people sitting courtside with the snacks or the drinks and that kind of thing. If a player falls onto them for comedic effect, they'll take some of the popcorn or they'll have a swig of the drink, that kind of thing. So my thing is, if an NBA player does that to you, they then have to personally invite you around to their house and feed you and your family the next evening, just out of courtesy.
They have to feed you?
That's only fair. I give a bit back to what you've taken.
The amount of money those people throw at those front row seats in the first place, I don't know if they're the most deserving. But I like the idea. I do like the idea. Josh, do you have one?
Yeah, I completely misunderstood the question. And I thought it was kind of... I took it from a more basic level as to what should fans put on their heads in the NBA. So I went for, actually, I think that the Nugget should, of course, be sponsored by McDonald's and have some kind of chicken nugget on their head. Or they could have a box of golden nuggets if they wanted to go for a kind of Yeah, so a box of golden nugget cereal, and maybe they can call themselves the cereal killers or something. I don't know.
Okay, so mine, I've gone with basically you enter a lottery when you go in. They draw the tickets at random. Obviously, the big money tickets are those across the sideline. So we're going to stick to the corners of the sideline across the baseline. If you get selected to go, you have to sit and wear a regulation hoop on your head with a net. And basically, because the half court shot is dead now. It's just everyone's done it. It's boring now. Basically, what happens is they happen so rarely, but if someone spike blocks and it's flying off the court, you have to be in the right place and have the right coordination. If you get that ball through the hoop, you win $1 million.
I like that.
So is the person with the thing on their head, is their face essentially like a backboard? So where
it's on their head. On it's their not head. In front of their face. Okay. Like, no, I'm not asking these people to get Spalding written backwards on their forehead.
It still could possibly happen, but for that reason, I think it adds a lot of entertainment value. So I'm fully on board. And I think you thought that out really nicely, Mike, but what if they just had some nuggets on their head?
That's true. I don't think I can compete with that. That's definitely the easiest in terms of, like, you know, price point accessibility is to just stick some nuggets on your head. Our founding father, Matt Wellington, PS5 or championship ring. This comes off the back of whilst the Lakers were getting their championship rings on opening night, the Clippers were receiving PS5s from the franchise next to their Perspex walled changing stations, which basically look a bit crap, to be honest. Not the PS5, the chair they were using. It looks like just a cheap office chair. Will you guys pick a PS5 over an NBA championship ring?
I think so. I'm not sure what's worth more at the moment. I can't seem to find a PS5 anywhere after I got some Christmas money now. So I probably would go for the PS5 myself, yeah.
Yeah, probably easier to get an NBA ring at this point, for sure. The main reason I was surprised by this is because it was the Clippers. I would have expected the Xbox to be the one that Ballmer was giving out with the Microsoft ties. So obviously they're clearly prepared to endorse a previous competitor. I'm not sure of his involvement anymore, but that's what surprised me, given Sony a nice bit of free publicity. I'd personally rather have a ring, but I'm somebody that doesn't wear jewellery, so it would be purely for the resale value.
They do get auctioned off quite a lot, sadly. For me, you know, at 36, I'm starting to realise that my hopes of making an NBA roster, let alone a championship roster, are fading. You know, they were there. I don't want to be the tag-along guy who sits at the end of the bench and gets a ring. So if I'm not doing anything and you're giving me a ring, just give me the PS5. I mean, Paul George has got two now. Sony, like, 2K sent him one straight off the bat when he got that, you know, well done on being almost good sort of off-the-cuff remark they made when they gave it to him. So he's got two. That's not fair. Just, you know, it's two more rings and then he'll ever have rings. But just give me a PS5, please. I don't even care. Give me an Xbox, whatever. I don't care. Just give me one. I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you take a leaf out of Paul George's book, you can just imagine that you've got one.
Yeah, that is true. I'm going to go back to my form when I was a previous owner of a PS5.
Just hope that people forget and say, you know, I've got a PS5, and then all of a sudden you'll be playing NBA 2K next gen.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Rich Barrett, with the Lakers losing last night, this was a few days ago, it got me thinking, in fact, it must have been the day after opening night, how many champions have lost their opening night game then gone on to repeat? Did either of you look this up?
Nope.
Because I did.
I opted out on the research because I had such great faith in you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. So I ignored the Minneapolis Lakers dynasty and I ignored the Celtics dynasty because they don't count. I was waiting to see the reaction. There we go. There's the reaction. I just wanted to see the faces. There was no splurted water, so
no,
I'm disappointed.
I had a full mouth of water, though, so that's going to be some pretty good meme material.
I'm not counting it. So I went as far back as 87, 88. So there have been 12 teams that have repeated, and I've included the second season of a repeat, so the three-peat as a separate one. So 12 teams have done it, and only two have lost on opening night. So odds are not in the favour of the Lakers, but I could go through the list if you want, but I don't think Kirk could stand it, so I'm not going to. I'll send it to Rich later.
Next question.
I mean, just next question. Yeah, too right. Hooping and Luton. Having just looked at a couple of St. Patrick Day's jersey, what colour jerseys would you absolutely despise your own team playing in, Josh?
I think I might have a similar answer to Tom here, but I'm going to go with purple and gold because of obvious affiliations.
Yeah, I think
you guys
so.
Are so predictable.
Sorry.
Is it the same?
Yeah,
Tom?
Definitely. And I just think red in general for the Celtics would look really bizarre. Like, I can't imagine ever seeing a team play in that in Boston. So,
okay, fair enough. I've gone with grey. I just grey. Those grey Wizards jerseys, and then to top that off, the grey matching tube socks from Robin Lopez. I've gone on the record many times on this podcast as being Rolo over Brolo, but I'm going to have to rethink that after seeing him in those grey tubes. They were disgusting. But I love tube socks as well. I love the throwback tube socks. But grey, it just looks like you've put your kit in the wash with something, you know what I mean? It just looks like it's just all the colours have run. Horrific.
Mike, would you like me to give you a less predictable answer?
Yes, I'd love it if you gave me a less predictable answer.
Well, I definitely haven't just Googled weird named colours. So off the top of my head, I'd probably say I'd hate to see the Celtics play in Gamboge. I would hate to see the Celtics play in Celadon. Oh, that'd be terrible. Glaucus. Imagine the Boston Celtics playing in Glaucus or Vermilion or Coquelicot. I can't even imagine them playing in Coquelicot.
Can you tell we've gone past 10 o'clock?
Yeah, this is when we normally cut the show off at 10. You went full Chris Webber
over time.
Okay, Tommy JR, hot topic on the Discord chat this week was the best basketball film of all time. Tom, what's your best basketball film
for me? And I think it's partially because I grew up with it, but Space Jam is my second all-time favourite film, so that's up there for me.
Incorrect answer. Josh, who have you got?
So obviously we had some pretty in-depth conversation about some basketball films. I've got kind of a holy trinity, but I'm going to go with White Man Can't Jump. I think it's got everything. I think the throwback style, the soundtrack, the comedy involved, the performances. I think it's timeless and it has some pretty decent basketball scenes in it. Just ignore the massive plot holes, but I'm going to go with White Man Can't Jump.
See, I always flip-flop between White Men Can't Jump and He Got Game. Yeah. And the comedy is definitely the draw of White Men Can't Jump. But He Got Game is the one I watch more regularly, so I'm going to have to go with that. So there we go. Three completely different ones.
Did any of you watch? I remember watching one as a kid once. Like something about red sneakers, and this guy finds some red shoes and instantly becomes incredible.
That's like Mike with Lil Bow Wow.
Ah, I'm definitely sure there's another one that's called like Red Sneakers or something like that.
It's called Red Sneakers.
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to Google it now.
Has someone put this?
I'm sure there's one that's called that.
Did you have like a vivid dream? This is actually you, just in a pair of red sneakers, but not the red uni, because that would be too far, because you don't like red unis. No. Find
the Red Sneakers. It is a film.
So it turns out that Lil Bow Wow's Be Like Mike is a fraudulent concept.
It's an independent film shot in Stoke-on-Trent.
Right, okay. So we had one... let's have a quick look. We had a one-up on that question from Elliot again, Hooping and Looting. I'll make it more interesting. What's your all-time starting five using players from fictional films only? I've just reread that fictional bit and that's making me kick myself. But I can flex on it. Tom, who have you got?
Oh, I didn't put a full five together. I just had a couple of key players.
Go for it.
So Lola Bunny would have to be in there. Okay. And Kenyon Stone from Coach Carter, because he was just a beast of a man. I think he's the tall centre guy, isn't he? Kenyon Stone.
I can't remember the names of the guys. I remember the film and that's about it. Josh, who have you got?
Well, I went to kind of I considered this and I thought about a lot of kind of high school people, and I thought if they were just quite good in high school, I'm gonna take the people who maybe went a little bit higher. I went for Neon from Blue Chips, played by Shaq for obvious reasons, as my starting center. Mm-hmm. I went for Butch McRae, also from Blue Chips, which is Penny Hardaway. as a point guard. He's a combo guard. I'll have Jesus Shuttlesworth at shooting guard because I feel like he might be able to make some shots, played by Ray Allen. At power forward, I'm going to go for, this is a weird one, I'm going to go for Elliot Richards from Bedazzled, which played by Brendan Fraser, because he's incredibly versatile and is basically able to dominate because he has the powers of Michael Jordan. And then finally, my final spot on my starting lineup is any player. So you can pick any player from Medfield High School basketball team in the movie Flubber with Robin Williams. But only if they have the flubber applied. So obviously I don't want them if they're just some normal little chumps. If they've got the flubber, so whilst they've got the flubber, they basically could fly. So with flubber, anyone from Medfield High School, and that's my team.
Flubber is an underrated film. Phenomenal.
I feel like if I went back and watched achievement. The whole thing, I wouldn't agree with you, but that scene is really quite something.
So we agree on Neon at center. We agree on Butch McRae at point guard. I had MJ at Space Jam, but then I realised it was fictional only, so I've pulled him, and I'm inserting Billy Hoyle. Even though he got into a match-fixing scandal, the guy has heart and hustle and was so competitive he couldn't follow through on the bet, which is why they're after him, and I'll take that. If you can't follow through on it, even if you were dodgy enough to get involved in the first place, small forward Jesus Shuttlesworth, and then my X Factor as well is at power forward. It's Scott Howard, a.k.a. Teen Wolf.
Oh, very good shout.
Oh, that's a shout.
You know
what?
I think that's the only one that can compete with my kind of supernatural ones because he's a goddamn wolf. You know, so it's it. think about the defense that he could play. It would be phenomenal. Yeah. Then again, he doesn't have flubber, so...
That's true. I'm not sure he could. He might be outjumped by someone with flubber. And when don't they have flubber on their hands as well? And they dribble the ball just like it's just rapid.
And yeah, I was watching that and I was thinking, actually, that's not that good. I don't know what that does for you to be able to like power dribble around the court like that. But each to their own.
Yep. And then next question, Rich Barrett. Who is the worst current player on 30 mil a season or higher? Discuss. Well, there are 23 people on 30 mil plus. So who have you got, Tom?
Tobias Harris, for me. He's definitely not going to be any better than a third guy on the team, and he's barely looking that at Philly at the moment. Shake Milton's outdoing him, so 34.3 million for him is just probably about 20 million too much for me.
No, that's a good shout. He's one of the six I highlighted. Josh?
Yeah, the same guy, Tobias. Obviously, he's been burdened with some pretty unfair pressure, I think, because of the contract. You know, it didn't make any sense at the time. It makes even less sense now. But for what you get in return, I think it's one of the worst contracts around. Please, Mike, based on our conversation earlier on, don't say Steph Curry.
No, it's definitely not Steph Curry. I love Steph. There's a jersey over my shoulder. That's a Steph jersey. Very small Steph jersey. I'm going Kevin Love because he's never led a team to anything and yet he's on 31 mil. Like in Minnesota, he never led them to winning. In Cleveland, he was the third guy on that team when they were good. And now he's just, you know, he's had issues with health, you know, injuries, things like that. I just don't see him coming back at his age, at the position he's at now, and being a 30 mil a season guy. next question from Grimbo22. What a great name. Which head coach will be the first to get fired? I'll come to you first, Josh.
Well, you know, despite their pretty positive start, I think Luke Walton is still the most clear name, the most justifiable axing at this juncture. I think we discussed it on the last pod or a couple of weeks ago about him definitely being the kind of most likely candidate, but I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking to my guns.
Yeah, it was him and one other, I recall, but I can't remember who it was. I've gone completely reactionary. I'm going with Dwayne Casey. Based on the start this season, based on just how, you know, he's had a few years in that role now, two I want to say.
Yeah.
They've sort of just, you know, stayed at the same level. They've now got a really poorly constructed roster, which is not going to bode well for them. And when the roster's constructed poorly, it's the head coach that gets fired, not the GM, which is stupid.
100%. There's some interesting guys to look out for as well. Obviously, quite established coaches, coaches that have been respected at different parts of their career, really, really well respected. That if we were to go 10 to 15 to 20 games at this level, you know, performing at this level, being this inconsistent, I think Billy Donovan and maybe Coach Bud, because of the high pressure situation of having some of the best players in the league, or certainly one of the best players in the league, that's a high pressure situation. So maybe by pod number 342, we can have this discussion.
Yeah, no, I agree. The weird thing with the Dwayne Casey pick as well is that, so he's been in the role 2 years. It was before accepting that role and after getting fired from the Raptors that he was awarded Coach of the Year. Let's have a quick one from, well, we've got a couple more to get through. Richard Fang, what's more embarrassing, the fact that Clippers lost by over 50 points or the fact that the Bucks lost to the Knicks?
Definitely the Clippers. Just the magnitude of that loss was ridiculous. The fact that it was the worst halftime deficit ever. I don't think you can ever say that that wasn't the most embarrassing one for me. What about you, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Bucks should be expected to win games against the New York Knicks, but the Clippers really should have came into this season with a fire lit under them. After last season and everything that went on and how much they got clowned on the internet, etc. Not that I think they pay that much attention to that, but they should be on an absolute mission with or without Kawhi. So I think Clippers losing in that fashion in particular, that's got to be, I mean, it's one of the most embarrassing parts of the season.
Like any team can beat any other team on any given night, but to roll over and get pounded by 50 is just disgraceful, really. And then a very last minute question for the pod. It's a 2K one from Richard Fang. Who do you think, why do you think 2K insist on making Andrei Kirilenko so ridiculously overpowered? And from your own experiences playing 2K, what is the one player slash card that gave you nightmares about still to this day?
That's a deep cut, isn't it? to just go off the cuff of why did 2K make him so powerful? Andrei Kirilenko, because he's AK-47 and he has one of the most interesting relationship dynamics ever. So 2K have got to recognise that. That's my only answer.
I think Kirilenko is an incredibly underrated player as well, historically. And also, they probably need to shift units in the motherland. So, you know, let's make the Russian better.
In terms of answering the other question, there are some people who are kryptonite. I remember, it sounds ridiculous now because he became such an unbelievable player. But in his rookie year, Russell Westbrook was way beyond his talent. I think, I'm going to show my age here, but I'm talking like NBA 2K. What's that? When was he drafted?
2013? No, more than that. Must be 2009.
I'm talking about 2K10 or 2K11. He was just completely unguardable no matter who you went. And I think that might have been the one where it was the special edition Michael Jordan one, where you could play as Jordan. Jordan couldn't stop him. Westbrook was ridiculous. But for the current one, I don't have it, so I don't have an answer.
It was 09 he was drafted. I got it right on my second attempt. Can't believe I went so late on the first one. Tom, who have you got?
So, I mean, I didn't play my team, so in terms of the cards, I can't really answer that one. In terms of the players that I have nightmares about, it's the players that I play with, and it's people like Jokic and people like that, that their talent doesn't really translate to 2K because they're not particularly quick or have a quick release. And so in terms of just having a high basketball IQ, that comes down to you with the controller. So having someone like Jokic isn't as big of an advantage as it is in real life.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I used to be really, really into my career mode. And I used to get really frustrated with not being, you know, if you call for the ball too much, your teammate grade drops, things like that. This is a few years back now, so I got drafted by the Bucks. Monta Ellis was obviously their go-to guy, and I was so frustrated that I wasn't getting the ball there. Then the next season, I got drafted by the Kings, and Tyreek Evans was a similar kind of player, and it pissed me off so much that I demanded a trade, carried on for the rest of the season. Then that summer, the team I was on traded for Tyreek Evans, and it all started again, and I was just like, this is horrific. So I was, you know, I just button-bodged, give me the ball, I don't care if it is a detriment to my teammate rating or whatever. But those two guys particularly annoyed me. Right, we've run long, so let's quickly go through games of the week. Josh, who are you taking and when?
Well, guess what? I'm going for the Celtics and Pacers on Tuesday. It's going to be an interesting one because I think they had a close game and it came down to the finer details. I think the Celtics will go into it with a bit of a point to prove. It'd be interesting to see how the young guys, Tatum and Brown, react to this and assert themselves. And once again, it will be good to see how Pacers capitalize on a really decent run, how effective Sabonis is and how much he, you know, lifts up that aggression that I mentioned earlier on in the podcast. So I'm going to go Celtics, Pacers, Tuesday.
It's a good shout. Tom, who have you got?
Well, you two took the best one, so I'm going to pretend like this is my first choice pick. But the Suns Nuggets on Saturday morning at 2 o'clock. I think the Suns are just a really intriguing team. We said this a few weeks ago that they might not be the best team, but in terms of having an interesting, fresh roster with Chris Paul, they're just a good team to watch. And the Nuggets haven't started very well. And I need Jamal Murray to start racking up the points like he was in the bubble for my fantasy team. So that'll be one that I'll probably rewatch later on Saturday.
Yeah, same. I've got him on my fantasy team. I've got an absolute flamethrower team, but the fires haven't started yet. For me, I've picked 12:30 a.m. Wednesday night, Bucks Miami. It's a rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals where Miami did an absolute number on Giannis, and I hope he seeks vengeance. So thank you to everyone for dropping in tonight. Thank you for seeing, you know, for all the comments in the chat. Lots of things going on. Richard Fang still trying to trade Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. thank you for all the follows. We had a sub tonight from Richard Fang. We had Discord Big Jig, Grimbo 22 and Jack H joined. Twitch subscriptions, we had Sam Grimes 10, Mr. Carbon Gaming. If you're not already, make sure you're following us at Double Clutch UK on all social media platforms. It's twitch.tv/DoubleClutchUK. If you want to come and watch this live, come and join in the festivities. If you want to join our Discord community, it's discord.me/DoubleClutch. Please check out the website, which is doubleclutch.uk, where we've had 3 articles go up recently. There's always stuff going up, but the 3 most recent ones: Hugh Hopkins, Here Comes the Spurs. Surprising. Sean Guest, Step Back Special, Step Back Into Christmas, which, I, by the way, I'm taking credit for that title. Step Back, Step Into Christmas is one of my favourite Christmas songs. Tom Lamming, the 2020-21 season is important for Kyrie Irving. So make sure you go and check them out. A couple more shout-outs to new listener Steve Powell, who's not watching live tonight because he's already in bed getting ready for the Rockets and Nuggets tonight at 2 a.m. These are the challenges that UK NBA fans regularly have to face and have to suffer, and I respect the grind for that. And also shout out to Tommy Rawlinson, who's one of the most active members in our Discord community, who's enjoying his last night as a teenager tonight. So hey, happy birthday tomorrow, man. And thanks for tuning in. Guys, anything else from you?
My last thing is Happy New Year. I hope that we have a long NBA season. I hope everyone has a fortuitous year, and the only way is up, of course. And my last request of the podcast is going to be that Tom turns around and plays us out.
Plays us out.
What do you want?
What's your most impressive piece?
Oh, it's probably going to be something depressing like Coldplay or something like that.
On that note, thank you very much for listening.
Good night.
We will see you next week. Cheers.
Lights
Happy New Year. Lights
will guide.
Have you ever had a dream that you had you could you do you want?